if this bill passes, any school district that wants to add sexual orientation to the non-discrimination policy would be prohibited from doing so.
It will send a stark message to a group of particularly students who already get lots of negative messages every day.
What I think is really going on here is a set of radical ethical innovations and ethic of care. We're obliterating our very best values even as we enact them. We're pretending we are something other than we are. And I don't think that serves us well, and I don't think it helps keep our hearts alive with each other.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Equality triumphs in the Australian Capital Territory, Missouri is set to kick around its queer students, and an activist author smashes shallow stereotypes finding soul beneath the skin. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 15, 2003. The Australian Capital Territory's Legislative Assembly this week approved its government's omnibus equality legislation. The Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Amendment Bill amends 37 territorial laws to remove discriminatory language and provide more legal protections. It extends to same-gender domestic partners most of the legal status granted to cohabiting unmarried heterosexual couples, but not the right to adopt children together. Among several amendments with respect to transgenders, it notably offers them a choice if they are arrested as to whether a male or female police officer will perform a body search. The governing Labour Party's bill also won support from the Assembly's Greens and Australian Democrats, but Liberal members opposed it. The ACT's Chief Minister John Stanhope said, "Everyone is entitled to respect, dignity, and the right to participate in society and to receive the protection of the law, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity. My government's new legislation now formalizes these principles into law. After our extensive consultation with the community, I feel confident that these progressive laws reflect the Canberra community's values." The ACT government will be reporting to its legislature in May on responses to its discussion paper regarding anti-defamation protections for gays and lesbians, parental status of same-gender couples, and legal recognition of transgenders.
Britain's House of Commons this week voted by a more than 4-1 margin to repeal the notorious anti-gay Section 28 of the local government bill. That's the Thatcher-era prohibition against local governments using public funds to promote homosexuality or the acceptability of homosexuality as a pretended family relationship. With Conservative Party members of Parliament free to vote their consciences this time, more than a quarter of them joined the overwhelming Labour majority in supporting repeal. They included some of the Tory leadership, although party leader Ian Duncan Smith opposed repeal. Repeal of Section 28 has been a top target of gay and lesbian activists since its enactment in 1986. But while the Labour Party-dominated Commons has previously supported repeal, the real battle lies ahead in the more conservative House of Lords, which has blocked repeal in the past. The National Gay and Lesbian Advocacy Group Stonewall this week launched a massive repeal campaign called Let's Nail Section 28 in anticipation of the Lords debate next month. Scotland's Parliament repealed its version of Section 28 in 2000 despite a million-pound opposition campaign by the religious right, but the law remains in effect in England and Wales.
But the man known as the architect of the UK devolution that gave Scotland and Wales their autonomous parliaments has ended his 34-year political career in the face of media allegations of gay cruising. Similar allegations in 1998 had forced Ron Davies to resign as the UK's Secretary for Wales and to leave the British Parliament, but he continued to represent Caerphilly in the Welsh Assembly. Since that so-called moment of madness on London's Clapham Commons, Davies had identified himself as bisexual and received counseling for his addiction to risky sex. He'd also divorced, remarried, and fathered another child. But last week, the tabloid Sun said he'd engaged in sex with a male stranger in a public woodland. Davies initially denied that at the time alleged he was or could have been in that place, Tog Hill in Somerset, listed as a cruising area on a gay website, but claimed later to realize it was a rest stop he'd made while driving. He never admitted to the sex, only that he'd taken a walk in the woods because he liked to watch badgers there. Soon after meeting with leaders of Wales' Labour Party, Davies announced that he will not run for re-election in May.
Also dropping out of the Welsh elections this week was candidate for Llanelli, John Jenkins, after his Welsh Conservative Party declared his homophobic web postings totally unacceptable. Jenkins had asserted that homosexuality is a medical condition and that gays should be excluded from marriage and military service.
Russia will ban gay men and transgenders from peacetime military service beginning July 1st, the government newspaper Rosseskaya Gazeta reported this week. New medical guidelines include a statement that those who have problems with their identity and sexual preferences can be drafted only in wartime. In an interview with Interfax, chair of the Russian Defense Ministry's Central Military Medical Commission, Major General Valery Kulikov, said of the ban, "This is not a medical matter. The classification of diseases by the World Health Organization does not include such a disease. The new rules are based on international norms, so we are not calling this a diagnosis. However, people of non-traditional sexual orientation suffer some psychological changes, while people with personality disorders are not eligible for the draft in compliance with medical examination rules for servicemen. The new guidelines also exclude people with HIV. Draftees still comprise most of the more than 1 million Russians in uniform, although the Ministry of Defense hopes to have a professional force by 2007.
In the U.S., the conservative branch of Judaism has agreed to reconsider its bans on ordaining open gays and lesbians and blessing same-gender couples. A formal request for the review was submitted by the president of the Rabbinical Assembly and was sought by the branch's lay president and others. In a process that could take years, a panel of 25 rabbis will debate whether current interpretation still upholds the biblical ban on homosexual acts. Conservative Judaism last formally considered the question in 1992, when the decision was to bar gays and lesbians from rabbinical schools, but not to actively investigate students or applicants. Those rulings were accompanied by a call to synagogues to welcome gays and lesbians and their families.
Meanwhile, the Reform branch of Judaism, which ordains gays and lesbians and holds ceremonies for same-gender couples, has accepted a transgendered person into its seminary for what's believed to be the first time. Transman Reuben Zellman was open about his status throughout the process of his admission to the Hebrew Union College, where the director of admissions described him as an outstanding candidate who was accepted on his own merits.
But in Tanzania, some 300 Muslims turned out in Dar es Salaam this week to protest a U.S. gay tour group's planned visit, even though the visit itself had been canceled. Organized and led by the local Council of Muslim Clerics, the protesters carried placards on a long march through the city before stopping for a rally. There, cleric Sheikh Musa Kaleo denounced all homosexuals, describing Islamic law's prescription of the death penalty as a fair judgment not only for them, but for all those who'd been part of planning the tour. He called on Muslims to keep what he called an obnoxious habit from entering Tanzania. A Christian leader, Archbishop of the Full Gospel Bible Fellowship, Zachariah Kakobi, had also previously threatened a demonstration against the tour. Another group had posted leaflets urging harassment to the tour group. However, Tanzania's Minister for Natural Resources and Tourism, Zakia Mgji, had announced that his government has no objection to gay tourism. At least 100 U.S. gays had been scheduled to begin a month-long visit this week, but reportedly that's been rescheduled for January.
And in predominantly Muslim Egypt, the retrial of 50 of the so-called Cairo 52, men arrested in a police raid on a gay-friendly Nile riverboat club almost 2 years ago, this week resulted in acquittals for 29 and convictions on debauchery charges for 21. Those convicted were sentenced to 3 years imprisonment. The outcome echoes the November findings of the Emergency State Security Court. In the face of widespread international protest, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak had ordered the retrial in a civilian court. Although the new sentences are longer than those ordered by the security court, in the civilian justice system, the convicted men have the opportunity to appeal to a higher court, and a number are expected to do so. Another difference is that all the defendants have been free on bail compared to the lengthy incarceration they suffered previously under what human rights watchdog Amnesty International has reported as inhumane conditions and torture. Continuing international denunciations have not stopped Egypt's jihad against gay men, which has resulted in dozens and possibly hundreds of arrests over the last 2 years. Another 13 gay men were arrested in a raid on a private apartment in Cairo last month. Also late last month, an Egyptian appellate court upheld one man's conviction resulting from a police internet sting, which has come to be a common practice.
And finally, it's been said that everybody loves a man in uniform, and apparently in Thailand, it's the revealingly tight brown uniform of the police. They're celebrated on a growing number of websites, and beat cops often attract crowds. Agence France-Presse has reported that emergency calls to police are turning out to be phone sex about 400 times each month. And a supervisor at the emergency call center says that about 60% of those calls are from gay men.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 15th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Whether or not you happen to be one, do you believe that gay men are hopelessly hypersexual, perennially promiscuous, and necessarily narcissistic? An activist and social philosopher who does happen to be one puts those external and internalized stereotypes to the test later in the program.
Every high school in the Midwest, all the queers are at the bottom, just above the poor and pregnant, just below the future farmers. I could feel it, so I left it. 12 years to unload. I'm looking both ways. I'm crossing over the road.
As the problems confronting lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students and educators gain more attention, the U.S. public school system has become a hotspot in the larger fight for equality. The latest battleground is in Missouri, where on March 5th, the state's House Committee on Education voted 13-11 to prohibit school districts from adding sexual orientation to their non-discrimination policies. If House Bill 239 passes, local school districts would not be able to expand their non-discrimination policies beyond the protections offered by state and federal law. Since sexual orientation is not included in those laws, Missouri school districts would be unable to protect lesbian, gay, bi, and trans students or staff from discrimination or harassment. Linda Wilson, a host of The 10th Voice on KKFI in Kansas City, Missouri, spoke this week with Andy Schuerman, a local high school teacher and member of the statewide advocacy group PROMO, Personal Rights of Missourians, and GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. But first, PROMO executive director and lobbyist Jeff Wernroe joined them by phone to explain the impact HB 239 could have.
We are now in a position where if this bill passes, any school district that wants to add sexual orientation to the non-discrimination policy, either for their teachers in their employment policy or for their students in their education policy, would be prohibited from doing so. And we're not quite sure what the effect would be for the school districts that have already taken the steps of protecting sexual minorities in their non-discrimination policies. The language of the bill is broad. It does not specify sexual orientation, but there was absolutely no question from the tone or the topics brought up in the initial hearing on the bill that sexual orientation, that gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgender people are the main target of this bill. There were 13 witnesses in favor of this legislation, and they talked the whole hearing lasted about 3 hours, and the vast majority of that time they were bringing up every bad thing you've ever heard people say about gay folks, and using that as a justification for why we do not deserve civil rights and why this bill should be passed. So the language of the bill is neutral, but there's no doubt about their ultimate purpose.
Are there other states that have this kind of law?
To my knowledge, this has not come up in other states.
It's out of committee, right?
It is out of committee. The next step is we are waiting for it to be reported to the House calendar, where it will be brought up for full debate in the full House. And our goal at the moment is to make sure that the legislature knows that there is a tension on this bill, that there is a lot of public opinion against this bill, and that if they bring it up, that it's going to be a big debate and it's not going to be an easy cakewalk for them. So go to our website, which is www.promoonline.org. That's P-R-O-M-O online, all one word.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to talk with us.
My pleasure.
In the studio with us is Andy. You're a school teacher in a local high school, is that right?
That's right.
This bill passes. What kind of message does it send to you and your students and your coworkers?
It will send a very stark message to a group of particularly students who already get lots of negative messages every day. They are delegitimized, they are disenfranchised, and they are told that their needs as a sexual minority are not important by virtue of the policies that don't exist to protect them and by virtue of the education that doesn't exist in the classroom today to educate people about other kinds of minorities. Currently, no school district in the Kansas City metro area includes sexual orientation in their non-discrimination policy. However, they are all bound by federal law to protect gay and lesbian students as well as they protect heterosexual students and any other students. What that has led to are some pretty hefty lawsuits that have been filed against school districts because school districts have ignored that implicit responsibility. And so with the inability of school districts to say, hey, teachers, administrators, counselors, all stakeholders in our district, we have a responsibility to protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students. Without that kind of empowering legislation or empowering policy, those kinds of efforts won't be taken as vigorously as they need to be.
Well, have you been harassed while you were at school?
I have. It takes place in juvenile and sophomoric ways with which we become well familiar as high school teachers. Need to be clear, not by colleagues at all. I've had a very accepting experience so far in my teaching career at the school at which I teach. But I had a couple of students who decided to put a sign in front of my door. The nature of the sign was terribly fascinating for me as somebody who's interested in educational psychology. The words on the sign were, "You gay sinner." So it wasn't a typical slur or a derogatory term that's used related to making fun of somebody's sexual orientation. It indeed was meant as such, but it really and underscored the fact that these students felt empowered to do that because their religion said it's okay. And that's one of the things that's really frightening to me is that, you know, we have parents and some teachers even who are saying not necessarily that they can harass other people, but that their beliefs about people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender are okay because their religion said it's okay. And that's a really frightening thing to me that kind of thing is allowed.
That was openly gay Kansas City high school teacher Andy Schuerman and queer Missouri state lobbyist Jeff Wernroe in conversation with This Way Out correspondent Linda Wilson.
What was he saying from the pulpit when I was dozing in the pew? You know they hide in public restrooms like a monster under.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine.
Thank you.
That was without cue cards, people.
Ironically, the rise of gay visibility since the advent of the modern liberation movement has been far more dramatic than the breakdown of negative stereotypes of gay men. Even as they embrace the message of pride, many gay men simultaneously internalize these negative images. But stereotypes did not ring true to activist and author David Nimmons, who decided to find out what gay men are really like. Drawing on scientific surveys, anthropological studies, philosophical inquiries, and personal observation and anecdotes, he came up with answers that may be surprising to both gays and non-gays alike. This Way Out's Brian Gowell chats with Nimmons about the positive images he describes in The Soul Beneath the Skin, The Unseen Hearts and Habits of Gay Men.
What are those emotions and habits that remain unseen to gay men and the rest of the world?
Well, the book talks about a series of seven of them. The first is that we have built the culture with the least amount of public violence among any culture of men in this country. which is a remarkable accomplishment. In gay worlds, there basically is no public violence. It's vanishingly small as a phenomenon. We also have huge levels of volunteerism and service, and a lot of documented studies show that our levels of volunteerism and service are far, far above other men, and we actually do a whole kind of different kind of volunteerism. We actually do caretaking volunteering, which is very different. What I think is really going on here is a set of radical ethical innovations that gay men have been trying out for the last 25 years, and that at the core of many of them lies really an ethic of care. Care in nonviolence, care in volunteerism and service, care in sexual caretaking, care for women, care for each other. And that's not usually a part of our gay narrative. It's not usually part of the story we tell ourselves. So the truth is that really a lot of the story we've told ourselves is woefully incomplete and highly inaccurate, that if you really look at the aggregate of what gay men are doing in these self-created worlds, you see traditions and habits and social patterns that look more like constituted spiritual communities than they look like anything else.
There is a part of the book that talks a little bit about that, and I'm wondering if you'll read it for us.
I'd love to. For too long, we've lied about our best selves. We've colluded in a series of discussions which tell half-truths. Some are self-inflicted, others sanctioned by the dominant culture, still others frankly concocted by those who would see us die. By rote, we rag on about too many drugs, moan over meaningless sex, complain over too many muscles and too much competition, censure the circuit, decry shallowness, bitch over body obsession, posit that the gay world makes, quote, no place for my size or ethnicity or color or age or style or weight. We say gay men are dogs, and we replay the came out, got disappointed, got depressed, got infected, got bitter litany. No wonder we're depressed. It's a wonder we haven't all slit our wrists long ago. And we've had enormous help in constructing this narrative. For years, it has seemed that the most common tale we've told, that most easily published, promoted, and promulgated, is a relentless, dour criticism. It has its approved canon of permissible topics and stands. Muscles, bad. Too much sex, bad. Too little sex, bad. Circuit and substances, bad and worse. Barebacking, really bad. Dating disappointments, sad. Sex addiction, internet addiction, cigarette addiction. Tawdry public sex, communal shortcomings, exclusion, and oh, did I mention body fascism? All in all, it's a litany of familiar dismals, each with its kernel of truth. Most derive from our fondest hopes betrayed. Yet together they provide a received narrative that is as factually incomplete as it is grossly misleading. More important, when they become the only story that we know to tell ourselves about ourselves, they become our reality.
In a lot of ways, a lot of the habits that we are accustomed to, whether we realize them or not, whether others do, are often habits that we're made to feel shameful about. And what I got from the book is that what you're trying to say is we really need to look at ourselves and feel good.
Well, we need to look at ourselves and see our picture accurately. It's really not a book that is intended as a rah-rah booster book. It's not a feel-good book. It is a book to tell truths and to say, look at all the parts of our story, because only by understanding ourselves fully and the full parts of our narrative can we hope to begin to make mindful choices about which parts of ourselves we inhabit. But what's interesting at the moment is that we're omitting, obliterating our very best values even as we enact them. We're pretending we are something other than we are. And I don't think that serves us well, and I don't think it helps keep our hearts alive with each other.
Once gay men begin to acknowledge these subcultures that you talk about in the book, what kind of transformation then begins to take place for gay men and their lives?
That's the point of this. You've gone to the heart of why this is important work. Because we can't begin to redress the ways that we feel we don't meet each other's hearts until we know our whole story. And I believe there are failings in the ways we've constituted community habits and practices, conventions, language, rituals, institutions, and that we've gotten kind of stuck in a paradox where we, on the one hand, show all of these magnificently loving values, these magnificently ethical and high spiritual values, and on the other hand, enact with each other a set of exclusive values and exclusive practices and things that hurt us and make us guard our hearts with each other. And that's a tragedy. And if we hope to pull ourselves out of that spiral, we have first to understand the ways we actually live and what the values in those are. If we're to be able to create some cultural space for opening up a new and more radiant and sustaining set of values with how we are with each other.
I want to ask you about the preparation process for this book. You were the president of New York's Lesbian and Gay Community Service Center. You worked at the Gay Men's Health Crisis. The book is also peppered with anecdotes from people that you've known along the way, giving examples of what you talk about in the book. Tell me what kind of effort went into writing the book, how long it took.
Well, the book is really part of a larger movement called Manifest Love. And what that attempts to do, we have groups of men who meet around the country in chapters. I lead weekends and teach about this stuff, this ethical analysis. And so a lot of the stories in the book actually come from the men who've been in those groups, people's stories that I've heard. And the book itself took about a little over a year to write. But the thinking in this and the gathering evidence and data has been going on for about 3 years. And I had this set of ideas and wanted to test them by going out in the world and sort of running pilot groups and talking to men and seeing if this made sense. And the response was not only that it seemed to describe some of the core quandaries of our lives and the ways that we feel we fall short with each other and our hopes for each other, but also that people hadn't really had a language for talking about it. So the book attempts to provide, between its covers, a way of beginning this set of discussions. But the ultimate goal is to transform our common culture with each other and to point some ways to a vision that is more humane with each other. We have a chance to create something that is a radiantly loving space for us to inhabit together. And it takes very concrete forms. This is not woo-woo language. This is really true. This has to do with how we interact with each other. And if we become more mindful around that, we can create something that is really breathtaking for us to have the experience of what it is to have a community of men who manifest love with each other.
David Nimmons, thank you.
My pleasure.
David Nimmons is the author of The Soul Beneath the Skin, The Unseen Hearts and Habits of Gay Men, and it's published by St. Martin's Press. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goble in San Francisco.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Linda Wilson, and Brian Goble contributed program material. Thanks also to Mark Manning, Paul Jaffe, and J.D. Doyle. Meg Hengis performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at dworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WEFT Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, 7LTN City Park, Tasmania, KFAI Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.